Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, you are listening to Just Films and That. This is the podcast that celebrates films we think deserve a little bit more love. I'm your host for this week, Josh Hallam, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host, Alice Oliver. So, let's see what we're going to be talking about. Alice.
Yes, Josh.
The Blair Witch Project.
The Blair Witch Project.
From 1999.
Mm-hmm.
We were there. Millennium Bug was coming.
We were there,
Pierce Brosnan was James Bond. The world was going to end. Planes were going to fall out the sky. Simpsons was good.
So good.
Loads of stuff was happening. So good. Yes, so The Blair Witch Project is what we're going to be talking about this week. It's from 1999. Spoiler warnings if you haven't seen it. And I suppose it is a horror film that touches on some quite darkish stuff. So if that's an issue for you.
Spooky. It's a spooky one.
Yeah,
it's a spooky
then it's
one.
An issue for you. Don't listen to it. Not bothered. Don't listen to it then. It's fine. It's your choice. Literally your choice. Alice, you pick this one then. Now, I think there's a story with this one because you picked it this week and said, I can't believe I'm doing this to myself. So either you hate this film and you're making yourself go for it again, or it really, really scared you. So tell the people at home, if for people who don't know what the Blair Witch Project's about, give them a little 10-20 second about what it's about, and then tell us why on earth did you bloody pick it for this podcast?
So the Blair Witch Project is a found footage film about three filmmakers who head into the woods in Maryland in the US to explore and uncover local myths and stories around the Blair Witch after some strange goings on in the area. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Yeah. We're just watching that unfold, obviously, through the found footage. So why did I pick it? So I've only ever seen this film once. So I think I've said to you before, I don't watch a lot of horror or scary films, mostly because I get scared really fucking easily. Like, I am a huge, enormous wimp. But I've seen this film once before, and it was during, I do believe it was when I was at college studying film, but I can't remember why we watched it, which is really frustrating. Like, I wish I could remember the reason. Because I was studying film, but like, what was it? Like, what were we exploring? What were we diving into? And this was the example, you know, but I can't remember. But I just remember it freaking me the fuck out, right? And so we're talking in the middle of the day in a classroom full of other people, and I'm sat there shitting my pants, right? And when we finished watching it, everyone was like, "That was a bit shit, wasn't it?"
You watched the whole thing in class.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing in class. Yeah. And everyone else was like, TV gets wheeled in, back of the classroom, might have even been a little projector. I can't remember. But everyone was like, "Oh yeah, that was a bit shit, wasn't it? That was boring and all this, blah, blah, blah." And I was like, well, we watching the same fucking film? Boring. Are you messing? And then it's weird because if you read around it, you've got there's like a real division of people who think it's amazing.
There is, yeah.
And, you know, didn't launch the genre, but it's certainly what you think of when you think of this found footage genre. And then other people who just think it's really stupid, they don't really get it, they think it's silly and all this sort of thing. So I was like, you know what? Can I do it? Can I bring myself to watch it again? Knowing that it is going to scare me and freak me out. So I said to Ollie, I was like, you've got to watch this with me because I am going to struggle otherwise. And it was hard, you know? I was freaking out.
So you were genuinely still quite scared by it?
genuinely, and I'll go into it a little bit more when we get into the likes about it. But yeah, it really, really got to me. So I sort of went into it thinking that I think it is a bit underrated.
Yeah.
And I think it's really underrated with certain groups of people, with for no good reason as well. Like, I don't agree with the criticisms of it. And I certainly don't agree that it's like a badly made film or that it's boring in any way. So I just had, and I was keen as well to go back, and I was like, you know, what am I going to make of this? You know, haven't seen it in years and years and years. What is the effect of this going to be on me? So I was really excited to watch it. Anyway, Josh, had you seen this before?
No, I hadn't, I don't think I'd seen it before. Obviously, okay. I knew about it.
Yeah.
I'm not really, I don't think either of us are old enough to remember it coming out. I don't know about you, I don't remember it coming out.
I wouldn't remember it coming out. It would have been 10, yeah, but no, I wouldn't 9. Have been.
So but what I do remember is after it came out, all of the parodies.
Yes.
Because there were so many. I mean, obviously you got Scary Movie, but there's all that. It was one of those things, a little bit like The Sixth Sense, that started showing up in like adverts. And telly and stuff like that, just constantly being parodied and made fun of stuff. So it's quite interesting to watch this film whilst trying to ignore that baggage.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Whilst trying to ignore everything that came after it, which I managed to do. But no, to answer your question, I had not seen it before. I had not.
Okay, wowzaroonie. So then, please tell me, what did you think? Go on, just hit it. Just hit me with it.
Think about it.
What do you think? What do you think?
I thought, but do you think I liked it or do you think I didn't like it?
I think you could perhaps appreciate it as a piece of filmmaking and sort of some of the techniques that have gone into it. But I don't think you were scared, and I don't think you were probably that entertained either.
So you're not. You're close, but actually, I liked this film much, much more than I thought I was going to.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's
I thought
a good
I
start.
Was going to be bored. I thought I was going to be, you know, because it's a lot of the same thing.
It is.
And I knew it was going to be a lot of the same thing, because that's sort of the nature of the beast in that sense.
Hey, tell you what though, Josh, tell you what, only an hour and 20 minutes, eh?
Only an hour, hey, only 80 an hour, odd minutes. Minutes. I'll take
nice,
that. I'll do it. I'll watch it twice. I was appreciative of that. Yeah, so I liked a lot more than I thought I would. Was I scared? Not like shaking in my boots or anything, like struggling to sleep. I think, to be honest, and this comes up in my dislikes, but I'll touch on it now. I think if I'd have seen this in the cinema, I would have been scared. But because I watched it at home with a cup of tea and my laptop taking notes, I wasn't that scared. There are things in this that are decidedly and evidently creepy.
Yeah.
And definitely towards the end, the last 15 minutes, I was a little bit like, ooh, it's some of the stuff. But no, I wasn't dead scared. But then I don't get that scared in general by horror films.
Okay. Is it
I'm just not into it because you're hard. No, I think there's just something in my head that's just going on with the film.
I know, and I wish I don't know why I don't have that as a film student and all that.
When we did Silence of the Lambs, even though that is a fictional story, I find that quite creepy. The psychology and what human beings are capable of doing, I find quite creepy, and especially when you look into the story, into the background of Hannibal Lecter, who he's based on, the multiple people he's based on, and stuff like that, is quite horrendous. So I do find that sort of stuff quite creepy. But yeah, I think there's an element as well of this sort of thing. I think because it's... to have it happen to you, what I would find scary is, well, that could happen to me. And to have it happen to me, I'd have to go into those woods, and I just won't go into those woods. So then, therefore, it won't happen to me.
You've got some control over that, right?
Yeah, whereas something like Funny Games...
happened to you.
Could happen to any of us, really. So I think it's just different tastes, isn't it, really? But I didn't find it not scary. It was definitely creepy places. And I was pretty entertained throughout. Much more than I thought. I think the short runtime, that does help. That is definitely to the film's strength. I mean, I read when I was finishing my notes that the original cut of this was like 2.5 hours. And I was like, hell.
Can you imagine?
It's a lot, you know, a little of this goes a long way.
Yes,
and I think the length that they pick is perfect.
Yeah. And I reckon as well, because the heightened emotion and sort of, you get to a stage quite early on where the emotions are very, very heightened.
Yes.
And to sustain that for 2.5 hours would just be, it would be impossible, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. So, yeah, right, that it's a shorter length.
Overall, yeah, I liked it a lot more than I thought. Not that I went in snob, like thinking I was looking down on it or anything like that. I just remember going in thinking this is going to be a lot of the same thing and it's going to wear thin after a bit. Mm-hmm. But no, I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to do. Thought it was great. Anyway, I thought it was good. So anyway, let's get into the like section then. So you picked this then. So let's hear it. What do you like about this film, and how did you find it? How did you find it watching it a second time as sort of a little bit older with your husband in your house rather than in a classroom?
And with the critical eyes as well. But honestly, I thought it was excellent. I think the performances, the script, the story development, the mise-en-scène and the tension building, I just feel like it's all done to such terrific effect. So for me personally, I think this film absolutely masters the techniques of tension building, of suspense, and of creating absolute terror by not showing you very much at all and just using like the reactions of the characters to create feeling. And before I went into this, I was prepared. Knew that I was going to pick it, like I said, like, or I was dreading this sort of thing. I was definitely prepared to be terrified again, right? But as we're going through the film, if we get about halfway through or so, I started getting a bit cocky and I was like, oh, actually, I know where this is going. I know you don't actually see anything scary.
I'll take you on Blair Witch Project.
Exactly.
What have you
I
got?
Was like, oh, the jump scares are all, they're all just fake. Nothing actually really
you may
happens.
Go,
and
Ollie.
It's not. and it's not that bad at all. And then literally about 5 minutes after I had that thought, I was like, oh no, I'm fucking shit myself now. Like it did not last. But by the end of this, I was terrified. And I had a nightmare the night after I watched it. I went to bed nice and early, you know, 10 p.m. or whatever. And then I woke up at 1 a.m. having this nightmare and my heart was racing and my sort of fight or flight senses were going and I didn't get back to sleep. I just lay there thinking about the Blair Witch and thinking about the dream that I just had.
So you got out the tent in the woods. You went for a walk.
Went for a walk to clear my head.
Stretched your legs, cleared your head.
Yeah. So it still had that effect on me. So I think the way that our three main characters interact with each other, right? So they stop trusting each other so early on and the tension between them is so high and that really feeds through the screen, I thought. And I think you really feel their despair and their terror. And this is created using multiple things. It's through the performances, the script, the sound, and of course the found footage way that the whole thing has been shot, right? And the beauty of the found footage style, I think, is when it comes to horror, is that you as the viewer are so restricted in what you can see. And that is really scary. And it also feels really personal. Like if this was all filmed in a way where we're watching what the three characters are doing on like really high quality cameras and everything's nice and shiny and all professional, it's not going to have the same effect. When you're watching films that have been made, you know, in the traditional sense, you as the viewer, you usually come to know things before the characters, or, you know, you're aware of things that the characters aren't, and it gives you like a bit of sort of superiority and there's an element of predictability to it. But when you do it this way, you are as oblivious to everything as the characters are. Like you're in it with them. And that is partly where the horror comes from, I think, is you don't have this bigger picture view of what is going on. Do you know what I mean by
that? Yeah, it's like almost like sort of like it's playing with your senses a little bit, isn't it? It's taking away what would help you not be scared. So you're experiencing with the characters, but also it plays with darkness so you can't see. I think it does really good stuff with sound. There are bits where the characters heard things in this film that I didn't hear. So you hear a lot of like, you might hear like a really quiet like, what was that? Do you know what I mean? It's that sort of thing. Whereas what scares you is them going, what was that? Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. So it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of playing with what you don't know, playing with what you can't see or hear and stuff like that. So I think you're absolutely right. That, I mean, the found footage thing, it's not, apart from, there must be ones that exist out there, but apart from Chronicle, which is a superhero found footage film, I can't think of another found footage film that isn't horror or sci-fi. So you got this, obviously you got other ones like Cloverfield and things like that, but they all use that found footage to take away what you can see. So, you know, it's funny, isn't it? It's a bit of an oxymoron. You go into the cinema or you're watching a film to watch people or watch things where you actually can't see anything. So it's much more of a sensory experience than watching, you know, The Shining or another, The Exorcist, like you say, where you can see everything and you can see what the character's motivations, intentions and stuff like that are. At the end of the day, the Blair Witch, who is the antagonist of this film, or you're led to believe is the antagonist of this film, you never see her or him, them. You never see the Blair Witch, right? So whereas, you know where Freddy Krueger is, you know where Jason is, you know where Jack Torrance is, you know, all that sort of stuff. So there are elements of surprise and jump scares, but it's much more to do with where we're going to take away any tools you've got at your disposal so that you are absolutely so vulnerable like those characters are, I think. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Taking away the tools that you would usually have when you're watching a film to make you as the audience feel as vulnerable as the characters do. Yeah, that was really, really eloquently put, Josh.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You sometimes you're able to articulate the things that I'm feeling much better than I can. So I think the performances across the board are really strong. So you've got our three main characters who absolutely nail it. And the whole plot point around like the loss of the map, I think, is brilliant. And this moment is so well scripted and so well acted. But then away from those three, you've got all these extras at the beginning who are sharing like their accounts or their stories that they know about relating to the Blair Witch. And they're all so believable. Like they are just the most normal people going. It doesn't feel forced or scripted or anything, which I think really enhances the documentary-like quality of the film, which again adds to the terror, just how real it feels.
Yeah, I mean, so from my understanding as well is that not all of the people in the film are actors. So apparently at one point, now what we should touch on now is a really difficult thing to sort of touch on, not because it's a challenge or anything like that, but the big thing about this film was at the time that it was real. That was the thing. They released it as if it was real. They kept the actors out of the spotlight. They actually put on their IMDb page that they were missing, presumed dead.
Didn't know they went that far.
And all this stuff. So if you read through things like trivia, which I know can be played with and anyone can upload it, so it's a bit like getting it from Wikipedia, but if you read around this film, there's a lot of stuff where it's like, well, I don't know if that's true or part of the wider narrative that this was real, right? But there is definitely something about the people they're talking to are, some of them are real and they're being asked to talk about. Because obviously Blair, it's not a real place, is it? They renamed another place that or whatever. So that's the big thing. I think what you've got to bear in mind if you're listening to this home, if you didn't know, is that the big success of it, you know, this film was made for, I think they shot it for 60 grand, something like that. And I think it post-production, which is after they filmed it, the budget, it was less than $1 million. So it's something like 700 grand. And it made nearly, I think, 300 million quid worldwide. So this is actually, this was in the Guinness Book of Records as the most successful film per pound or dollar or whatever spent on it. So
yeah,
it was something like,
was so
yeah,
low,
it was something
yeah.
like 10 grand made for every dollar spent, something mad like that. So, and a lot of that was down to, they essentially presented it to the public as, this is real found footage, this is real stuff. And then, and that is.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We don't often talk about the marketing of the film in a positive way. We often talk about how the marketing of a film may have let it down, as we have done with other things. But this is the opposite of that. You know, the marketing made this film. It really, really did, and that's why it's so successful. But that's why it's hard to know if those people they're talking to are real actors. There's definitely a mixture of both, but that's not to say they haven't got real people and gone, we just say this, because there's something online about how one of the women that they talk to, she just made something up on the spot, and then they couldn't find her again to get a release form from her, so they just put her in the film. But then on the other side, well, how would they put it in the film then? Because surely, without a release form, you can't put it in the film. But I don't know. I'm not an expert, a lawsuit possibly. If you interview someone without a release form, which if you don't know is like what you have to do to put someone on telly outside of certain circumstances, then you'd be knackered. But then equally it's in America, so I don't know. It might be different. So
that's true, yeah.
So it is a real triumph of marketing, but all that just enforces all of the techniques they use in this film. But anyway, what else about it?
Well, I think just finally, so there's actually some low-key humour in here as well, which I do think helps make it feel a bit more authentic. So I'll be interested to know which bits you found funny. So for me, it's when Heather, when she's doing her like pieces to camera and sort of, you know, going into like the background of why they're doing what they're doing, and she goes into like presenter mode. And I really enjoy these moments because it makes her feel more authentic in the other parts of the film. Because like when she's on camera doing this, you know, we are exploring the Blair Witch or whatever it is she's talking about. And she goes, she like puts on a different hat sort of thing. She changes her voice and she changes her accent when she does it. And for me, as somebody who works in television, Josh, I don't know if I told you, but this is really relatable because the way I speak, obviously in real life, is not the way I speak when I'm on the telly. So you do put your presenter face on and your presenter hat on. So I found it was just like quite a witty little thing that I thought kept happening when she did this, and I found it quite amusing. And then a little bit later on, when they're in the woods, she spots a dead mouse and she says, "What killed this dead mouse? Witchcraft." And it was just like this little thing, this little throwaway comment that I found funny, and just sort of, it shows that they're going into this as well. I think they don't really believe. They just want to see what's going on, sort of thing.
Yeah,
or, you know, she likes hiking, so maybe she just wants a weekend in the woods, sort of thing.
You know, I did find that. The sort of first 10, 15 minutes are where they're sort of messing around, getting set up, going to the town, and then hiking to where they're going to go, and then talking to some of the locals. And I think there's an element of it of you're not sure if they're taking the piss out of the myth, or if she genuinely wants to get to the bottom of it. So there's that element of hubris of, you know, trying to bring them down a peg by what happens to them later in the film. And again, it's all built up by the fact that it's a found footage film, because it seems authentic. Like, if it was real, it's like, well, they're just messing about. They're just kids messing about before they go and do this thing, which obviously ultimately ends in as it ends. So yeah, no, it's in my notes as well. I just thought there was some good comedy and tone setting at the beginning, which then builds them up to knock them down, sort of thing.
So those were the main things for me, really. What about you? Is there anything else you liked?
We've touched on it mostly as well. I mean, it's a real triumph of marketing and stuff like that. So I think you do have to go into this. That's the important thing, is to go into this remembering that the whole thing, not only was the film is pretending it's real, but so was the marketing. It wasn't pretending that it was a film pretending to be real. It was, this is real stuff. And I think you have to admire the effort and stuff that's gone into that for the actors, for the production. I mean, obviously no one in it's famous, so it's not like they've cast, you know, I don't know, a massive name, Ryan Gosling or someone that, and then pretended he's died or anything like that. So, but it's still an effort to go to. It's a real commitment to get that idea across and sort of keep up that lie and stuff like that. You know, we touched on this before. There's a lot of the acting in this by the people who definitely are actors is almost hyper real. Mm-hmm. And that is not easy to do. Again, I read a lot about the sort of things the directors did to get realistic performances and reactions out of them. Some of it good, some of it a little bit like, well, we'll just act then. But anyway, whatever. Mm. The point is they certainly created an ambience around the three of them and did a lot of stuff around building them up, building their characters. There's elements of apparently staying in character or coming out of character and having an agreement that they would stay in character at the same time. If one of them needed, they sort of use like a safe word and all come out and stuff like that. So I thought some of that was quite interesting. But the point I'm making is it is really hard to play something as real as they play it, particularly the bits where they're not being big. So the bits where they're scared, there's probably an element of that being very, very exhausting and energy sapping, but easier than pretending to be three friends messing around in such a mm-hmm. realistic way that you would believe that they were friends in places as yeah. well. So I thought they did really capture that sort of terror and desperation and build up and tension and all that sort of stuff. Like you say, from whether it's them messing around at the beginning, the bits where they're essentially bickering and stuff like that, that felt real right through to the end. I mean, overall, just, you know, just to finish, I was entertained throughout. As you know, I did really enjoy it. Enjoyed, like you say, the tension building and the minimalism of it. You know, there is not much music in this, or I couldn't hear much music anyway, because it's all meant to be real. So yeah, overall, I thought it was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Nice.
Okay, so we'll move on then to talking about things that we perhaps didn't like about this film or that we might change about the Blair Witch Project. Alice, I'll come to you first. Is it that it's too scary?
It's too effective? A bit too scary for me. I don't know if I could watch it again for a third time.
Anything for you, anything at all.
So they're really, really small things, to be honest. The only things I can mention in this section really are just the odd thing that made me feel a bit uncomfortable, right? So obviously the shaky cam is relentless, and at times it is a bit difficult to watch. And this, of course, is the whole point of the film, so I absolutely wouldn't change it about the film, but it did just make me want to turn away every now and then just to sort of steady myself and feel a little bit less seasick. So that was a shame. The other thing is obviously the very famous and parodied scene where she's sort of crying and snotting. Heather now is sort of crying and snotting right into the camera. You know, there's this extreme close-up of the side of her face. And again, it is just a little bit difficult to watch and makes you feel uncomfortable in a different way to how the rest of the film does. But for me personally, I don't think it really adds anything. Like, I think the film would still be as effective and I would still feel as terrified if that shot wasn't done like that. Because I'm not saying remove the scene altogether, just maybe a bit less gross no stuff going on. Because I don't really like gross stuff anyway, right? It makes you feel a bit sick. So I was just a bit like,
less phlegm.
I could do with that. Less phlegm, please. So I could have done without that. And then just beyond that, and this isn't what I would class as a like or a dislike, but just something I wanted to raise with you and see what you thought. But I did think as I was watching it, would this work either with modern audiences or in a modern setting? Now that everybody has an iPhone or, you know, a smartphone that can film and is live streaming everything anyway, like, is the impact lost with time? And do you think that a 16-year-old or an 18-year-old watching this now for the first time would get spooked?
It's hard to say. I mean, everyone's different. I think for me, I think there are elements, you know, because I was watching it for the first time as someone with a smartphone in my hand and all that sort of stuff.
That's
so
true.
There was elements of finding it scary because I think they get across well enough that they are lost, isolated and alone and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, if you made it now, well, they'd just phone Mountain Rescue or whatever, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So they'd have their phones on them. So no, maybe it wouldn't work if you set it now. Would people watching it now find it effective? I think so, maybe to a degree. But then everyone's different. This might roll off some people's backs, as I'm just not asked about it. And other people, it might really absolutely play with their heads. So it's hard to say. That does come back into a little bit about what, you know, something I didn't like about it, which I'll come on to. But is there anything else for you?
There isn't actually.
Oh,
that's
right, okay.
It. That's it. So you go ahead. Tell me what your point was.
I've only got really one main thing. There's one other thing, but I'll touch on it. It's not really anything. But the main thing is I think that there's a couple of issues with this film, which are all encapsulated by the phrase "you had to be there."
Okay. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I wonder. This film would have been far more effective for me if I'd have watched it in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Add to that, I would have been even more scared had I gone in No, I don't know if I'd have been at the appropriate age in 1999 had I gone to see it. I don't know if I'd have bought into the fact it was real. But something about that would definitely have enhanced the feeling, I think. Mm-hmm. Because it's a sort of symbiotic feeling of watching a horror film in the cinema with other people. So I think, yeah, there's an element that had to be there in that watching it in the cinema would have been more effective. I think that, you know, there's something probably lost a little bit in terms of time and knowing that the marketing ended up being a facade. So I think that definitely enriched the experience and was probably a little bit lost watching it on a streaming service in your own house. Mm-hmm. That's not to say it wasn't good. I'm just wondering if, like you say, the impact of this film has been lost a little bit, you know, over time to mm-hmm. some degree. Other than that, I mean, I do have to say, I think you'd probably stop filming at some point in this, during all the bickering. I think you probably would go, let's leave it. I know she's like, it shows her to be obsessive, but yeah. I think if you're gonna kick a map into a river out of frustration, you'd smash a camera.
So I did see that was like a key criticism that some people had. It was just like, oh, but you would just stop filming. And obviously, you know, the practical part of my brain is like, right, but then there's no film, so that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also it is that, you know, like you say, they do try to sort of develop her character a bit as being a sort of a bit obsessive.
Like, it's the only thing she's clinging on to, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost like it makes her feel, I guess, a little bit more in control and a little bit more safe. And it's like, well, and especially because she thinks, oh, we're out here, we're not going to find anything. It's like, well, if we're not going to find anything, I have to have something. Like, I have to have recorded something. Mm. And maybe this will lead to something or whatever it might be. So for me personally, that wasn't an issue at all. But I did see that some people did take issue with that.
It wasn't really an issue for me. I just thought, well, you'd just stop filming at some point, wouldn't you? And then the only thing is, it was... Even though a little went a long way, I was marginally bored, maybe towards the second, third of the film. Before Josh goes missing.
Uh-huh.
Sort of that point, maybe like an hour in, where it's just sort of a lot of sitting and breaking down because they're lost and that sort of thing. But not massively so, just a little bit. But again, I think that would have been solved if I'd watched it in the cinema. And the other thing as well is, it's really annoying to hear your own name shouted so much.
I was thinking that as I was watching.
It's annoying. I don't know if there's any film where Alice has shouted so... They shout it so many times in the last 10 minutes. Yeah, and I was a bit like, this is irritating. But that's not really criticism I can levy at the film because that is just the character's name. But other than that, no, not loads for me. I think it's just a case of it being almost a victim of its own success over time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll move on to talking about the critical reception then. Now, I haven't seen the critical reception. We're not saying it's underseen. That's boxed off. We don't need to even touch on that. But ratings-wise, you've said this is really, really polarising. So I'm wondering if it's sort of got a lot of love and a lot of hate at the same time. So I wonder if you're saying this, you know, you got people in there giving it 8s and 9s and you got people in there giving it 3s and 4s and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if it balances out like a 6.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going to say. I'd give this a solid 7. Thought it was solid, solid film. Very, you know, very solid concept backed up by sort of successful marketing, which I think, yes, I appreciate this sort of the fact that that's faded and or more or less gone now. But I do think you've got to take that into account. Mm-hmm. I think you do. I would give it a solid sort of 7. I think it probably did less than that. Maybe we're calling it a 6. Lay it on me, how did it do?
Okay, so on IMDb at the time of recording, it gets 6.5. And then over on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics give it 86%.
Wow.
And then the audience give it 57%.
That's so not quite... So,
different, right?
Yeah.
So not as low as you were saying, sort of 3s and 4s and stuff. But for me, that audience score is a fucking joke.
The audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. What was it again? 57.
57%.
Yeah, that's. So if you work out the average, that's actually just under 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take the critics out of that, clearly the critics were drawn in by it, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean they clearly saw what it was going for and got it in the most part. I mean 89%, I'd say that is overrated.
But on 86,
the 86%. I mean 86%. I'd say that's probably a little, you know, it is overrated. But that equally that audience score is That is low for what it is. So I'd be willing to say, based on that sort of audience reaction, probably is a little bit underrated. Not if you work out the average, but if you take into account that audience score, what would you say?
So I'm sitting right there with the critics, to be honest.
86?
I think if I've got to think about what this film made me feel, how it made me feel.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I just think it's excellent in as a piece of cinema, as a piece of art that uses so little to achieve so much. I just think it's excellent. And I think I can absolutely see why my film teacher wanted us to watch it. I just wish I could remember why. Martin, if you're listening, please tell me why we watched The Blair Witch Project.
Was it a Monday? Or a Friday, because either way, it's like, you know, is he at the back of the classroom with you know,
stick the Blair Witch on, off you go,
with a Barocca, just fucking watch this, you little shit.
I genuinely think it is that good. But I know. Obviously, I am easily scared, and maybe I would always rate horror films higher because of the emotional success of that. Yeah, and because of the emotional impact that it can have on me, sort of thing. But yeah, for me, it's definitely underrated.
Okay, well, there you go. The Blair Witch Project from 1999 is underrated. I'd be interested to know if anyone out there hasn't seen it and you do watch it. Get in touch, because I'd love to know, how do you feel watching it now?
Well, there we are then. The Blair Witch Project, underrated and very, very scary. So I'm glad you didn't hate it, Josh. I really am, because I was genuinely worried. Yeah. I'm so pleased. That's great to hear. So, next week, listeners, I can't believe I'm saying this, but next week is the 200th episode of Just Films and That.
Yeah.
Gosh, can you believe it? And to celebrate, we are going to go off format a little bit, just as Josh gave me a little treat when he let me do Terminator 2, one of my, if not my most favourite film of all time. So to celebrate our 200th episode, Josh, I think you should pick your favouritest. It doesn't have to be underrated. It doesn't have to be underseen.
Okay.
Just pick your most favourite or one of your most favourite films, or just something you're absolutely desperate to talk about.
Okay. We'll have to edit out the massive pause now while I think about what it is I'm going to talk about. Okay. Do you know what? Right. I love Batman, right? We've done you Batman do. Returns when Rosie came on because it's a Christmas film. So I'm going to take this opportunity then to talk about a Batman film that I really love. Like you say, it's off format. I just want to talk about it. Let's talk about Batman Begins.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Batman Begins for episode 200. Indeed. I like the sound of that. Indeed. I am very excited about that. Oh, good choice. Indeed. Anyway, I'll say no more.
Okay, join us next week then for episode 200, where we're going to be talking about Batman Begins just because we want to. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us, it's filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. We're on all the social medias. If you just search for Just Films and That on Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, of course, Instagram, YouTube, we are on there. We're always putting content out there that's related to the episodes, but also a little bit of film content as well where we can. We're on Patreon as well, so if you want a little bit of extra content from us, ad-free extended episodes a day early, then go to the episode description notes and there is a link in there. All tiers start at £1 a month and include ad-free extended episodes, which we'll get a day early. We're also on the television, aren't we, Alice? It'll never last.
We are indeed. Every Friday from 6 p.m. you can find us on the local TV network. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, Liverpool or the northeast of England, you can find us on Channel 7 on Freeview. Or if you live in North Wales or South Wales, you can find us on Channel 8 on Freeview. And I'm also uploading all the videos to Daily Motion. So if you scoot on over there and type in Just Films and That, you'll be able to see exactly what it is we're up to.
Yes, lots of ways to see us, hear us, and we'll see you next week for episode 200.
Wow.
Cheerio, see you next week.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.